Call the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee meeting order. Today is February 4th. And we have presidents Senator Mackey, Senator Hoffman, myself, Chairman Senator Lehman. The first and only bill that we're going to take up today is Senate Bill 55, an act relating to the definition of certain state receipts providing for an effective date. It's a bill that has been submitted by the governor. And I understand that Annalee McConnell and Royce Weller will both be testifying. And if there's anybody else who wishes to testify, please sign the sign-in list. Are we on teleconference?
No.
Okay. Sign-in list, and we'll call him. Annalee.
Thank you, Senator Lehman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Annalee McConnell. I'm director of the Governor's Office of Management and Budget, and with me is Royce Weller, who is the budget analyst from OMB, who has done most of the legwork on this bill and prepared the fiscal note for you. Many people know the concept behind this bill as something that was dealt with last year, initially in the context of test fisheries, and was a bill that almost passed, and it was really intended to deal with what has become kind of an accounting catch-22. And that is, we have an ironic situation that there are some items in our budget expenditures which could grow, and actually in many cases which are in the economic development area and which people see as a real positive, and yet that increase in the expenditures counts as an increase in the total budget. And we've ended up in a situation where either some of those activities get held back a little bit because of this, because of the concern about increasing the state budget, or where other areas end up having to take cuts in order to allow for the expansion in what's been, we've called, designated program receipts. The bill that was proposed last year started off as a measure to look at the issue of test fisheries and recognize the fact that there are many places now where the industry is very interested in getting a test fishery started. They realize that the state doesn't have unlimited resources, and they're willing to pay for the costs of doing the test fisheries, but they recognize that it would be important for the state to be the one to actually conduct the test fisheries so that there's the proper kind of oversight and so forth. That was combined with some other approach, or a similar approach in some other areas, where we could acknowledge that there are either restrictions by virtue of statutes already passed by the legislature in prior years, or contracts that we enter into with people who are willing and able to pay the full cost of a particular service. As I mentioned, many of these are in the economic development area. That ranges anywhere from the test fisheries to permitting or licensing. Some of the examples that have been notable in the past were the Badami Pipeline, where the industry was very interested in paying the full cost of doing that permitting, and the actual activity would be conducted by the state. We have a number of areas within the Department of Commerce where, by statute, the legislature has already made a determination some years back that the cost of the service should be entirely borne by those who are being regulated. And whether we're talking about occupational licensing or utility regulation, the concept is really the same. There's a one-for-one relationship between the money that is coming in from the user and the money that the state would be expending. What we're proposing in this bill is not to take this off budget, and that's been a key item for me and for others as well. We're actually moving in the direction of trying to show much more consistently throughout our budget process all of the fund sources, whether it's federal funds, fees such as this, or any other source of money, so that people can get the full picture of what state revenues and state expenditures are. But what it would do is treat them not as the part of the unrestricted general funds category. And so by setting them into a different category, we acknowledge that the cost of the service will equal the revenue that's collected for that service. And we're doing this on the basis of some criteria. And we've outlined in the fiscal note, there's a spreadsheet attached to the fiscal note, where we've broken down by the different categories, the kinds of fees that we would propose to call designated program receipts. fees and other revenues. The first grouping is what we've called assessments, and the best example there would be the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, where the industry self-assesses. The money is spent for that purpose and sent on to Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute for the purposes for which the money was originally collected. The next grouping is contracts, and in this case we have in our budget proposal a number of areas where there would be an increase between 97 and 98 in the items done under contract, where the full cost of the service would be borne by the person with whom the state is contracting. And this ranges from, as you can see from the spreadsheet that we have here, from training classes where the tuition fully covers, various contractual services where the state provides a particular service either to a local government or to an industry. In some cases, we have industry that's very interested in getting specialized training, for instance, for the people that they would like to hire for projects that they would like to do through the Alaska Vocational Technical Center. A number in the DNR area, that's where the Banami Pipeline kind of example would come out. And there are approximately $1.8 million worth of increases between the 97 and the 98 budget in this contractual category. The next is restricted fees, where, again, there's a one-for-one, always a one-for-one relationship, where we charge a fee for a particular service. It might be the criminal background check, for instance, that's part of the teacher certification process. The Safety Advisory Council conference activities, which are paid for solely by the participant fees, and so on. And then we have a category where, by statute, the legislature has determined that the cost of service should be fully borne by the users. Most of those are in the commerce area, or the largest dollar volume are in the commerce area, insurance, occupational licensing, et cetera. We do have a couple of examples where federal law restricts use of funds. And in this one, for instance, we have the WIC program, where rebates from manufacturers come in. It's not actually federal funds, so it's not showing in that grouping of state revenues, but comes directly from the manufacturer. And then lastly would be third-party billings, which is a relatively small category, and that's for travel expenditures, again, all in the commerce area. We would continue in our budget process to show these, so everybody was well aware of whether there was an increase arena. It would be part of the total funds picture that's presented of the budget. We've shown it with and without designated program receipts in our budget plan, the comparison of the 97 to 98 budget plan. And the key point in all of this is that you can have an increase in these arenas, as mostly in the economic development area, without increasing the fiscal gap, because all of the cost is covered entirely by the users. So that was one reason for wanting to really make a clear distinction between these kinds of fees and the other kinds of general fund fees, where an increase in the expenditure could result in an increase in the fiscal gap. That, in a nutshell, is what we've proposed here. It would, as I say, still be treated as a revenue source to the state, shown fully. The legislature would still appropriate these revenues, so there would be no difference in terms of legislative control over the authority to have an increase or not have an increase in this arena, but it would not be putting us back into this catch-22 that we've been in, where an increase in an expenditure counts against us, if you will, even though it may be a positive activity all around. Be happy to field any questions, or if you'd like to walk through more of the detail, be happy to do that. We also have people here from several of the agencies that have the largest groupings of these designated program receipts, and they could give you more information about any particular one that you might have a question about.
Okay, let me just note that some time ago we were joined by Senator Kelly, and I'm sure you probably jotted it on the record. Thanks, Ann Lee. Any questions of Ms. McCollum right now? Want to go into a little more detail, Royce, or are you just kind of available for
questions? Yeah, your pleasure, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I'll just say that my concern with an approach like this, and it's one that I think, you know, you'll probably have others express some concern about, and that is shifting from general fund program receipts to non-general fund program receipts. There are times when that is appropriate, and there's other times when that can be done as, I don't know if I want to say an accounting gimmick, but as a way to make it look like we're reducing spending when in reality we're not. If it's not abused, I think this probably makes sense. If it's abused, then, you know, just setting us up for a way to abuse that, then I wouldn't support it. But if it's very restricted on how we would approach this, then I think this makes sense, because there are times when we do need to have the ability to take certain revenues, for example, the test fishery revenues. That's one concern. The other concern that I have is the approach, and I see this many times. I know it's in air permitting. I see it down here where the user pay agreements for work in Badami, TAPS monitoring, and tags, gas project, to where almost we're saying if you're going to get your permit, if you're going to get it on time, then you have to pay over and beyond, and then we're going to take this and shift it off because industry by contract is doing this, then we shift it off, you know, and it's not really off budget, but off general fund budget. It really is increasing state spending, but I can understand what you're saying also. And so I have a concern with sort of that approach. And then the only other one, and this is probably the easiest of the three, is, and it has to do like with these professional professional licenses.
Occupational
licenses. When the law, I don't believe, requires that it be exactly the same, but it says that the fees need to cover the expenses. So there are going to be some years where, you know, it's close, and then there's a readjustment of fees, and it goes through the hearing process. What do you do when we're adjusting, when, you know, when it's not exactly, how do you adjust expenses and the receipts if they're not exactly, do you end up adjusting that with general fund, with the general fund source, or, you know, what is the actual physical mechanism that you use for making all that balance?
Maybe taking those in order, and I think perhaps the best person to address your last question would be Guy Bell from Commerce, because he can give you the greatest detail there. The first issue you raise about needing to be careful that we don't abuse it, and is it really a cut, and so on. We have taken that into account by using an apples-to-apples comparison, because it's true that if we change the accounting terminology that we use for this, we haven't really made a cut in the total state spending. So that's why we've been showing both the 96 actuals, the 97, or all three, 97 authorized and 98. And we've shown our budget plan that way, too, so that we're not pretending that it was all one big package of spending in 97, and lo and behold, we're going to make this enormous reduction in 98 by taking them all out of the general fund category. So we are still tracking them as an apples-to-apples comparison and showing both years with designated program receipts and both years without, so that we aren't engaging in something that may make the public skeptical about whether we're being correct. The second thing you mentioned does get to an issue, I think, of cost control. And one of the things that we have made a big point of in the last 2 years is letting agencies know that we are putting just as much scrutiny on the areas that are funded by things other than general fund as has traditionally been on general fund. So, for instance, in the area of designated program receipts, we didn't automatically grant every increase that was requested partly because our feeling is we should still be looking to provide services that are as cost-effective and efficient as possible. So just because all of the cost of licensing engineers is going to be borne by the engineers doesn't mean we should have unlimited ability to have the highest fees in the world. So we have really looked at designated program receipts, given them a high level of scrutiny, and asked departments to go back and find ways to cut costs in those areas as well, so that and that's an assurance that I would give the committee and the whole legislature for the future as well. We know that we've got to make all of our dollars really count, not just the ones that happen to be unrestricted general fund dollars. And perhaps if you'd like, I could turn the third question over to Royce, you're right, we don't have a squaring up on a minute-by-minute basis, but he could probably give you the best detailing of how those are adjusted. And you could either...
We'll hold on that and see if Senator Kelly has a question for you while you're here.
I apologize for coming in late, and you probably covered this before, but how does this affect the fiscal gap?
Increases in these fees don't affect the fiscal gap, and the reason is if we use Badami Pipeline as an example, because that's one that came up a couple of budget cycles ago. In that case, industry wanted to get the permitting for Badami, and they were going to pay the full cost of doing that. So although the total expenditure of the department went up by, and we'll just use false numbers, it wasn't $250,000, but let's say it was. If the cost was $250,000, basically the department and the industry entered into a contractual relationship saying, we will give you $250,000 for $250,000 worth of work. So although the total cost of the department's expenditures go up by that amount, they also get increased revenues, and therefore there's no increase in the fiscal gap. Unlike other situations where we don't have a one-for-one relationship, and any shortfall in the revenue basically has to be made up from general funds. And we, of course, have lots of those areas where by public policy we don't charge the full cost of an activity because there's a public reason to have it partially supported by general state revenues, unrestricted revenues.
Well, I'm still unclear. Are we looking to increase the program receipts and take them off budget?
They wouldn't be off budget. They would still be appropriated by the legislature, but instead of being in the column along with general unrestricted general funds, we actually in our accounting system have a separate, and budgeting system, we have a separate category for designated program receipts. So in many of our documents, you would have general fund, federal funds, and other funds. This would be in the other funds category. We actually have gone one step farther, and we show designated program receipts as a separate item within the budget detail in the department.
That's something new you've been doing?
Pardon?
That's something new?
Yes, and we began it about a year ago or a year and a half ago. It was in the 97 budget cycle that way, so that everybody saw, although clearly there wasn't as much attention on it yet, but we presented the information for the 97 budget with designated program receipts and other types of program receipts, and then, of course, each of the other funding categories, federal and so forth, corporate receipts. Corporate receipts reminds me that there are also a couple of cleanup items in this bill which were not in the bill that almost passed last year, the one that everybody tended to call the test fisheries bill. We did realize as we went through our review again this cycle that really there was nowhere a clear description of how corporate receipts should be handled, although we've dealt with them for years. We realized that needed to be codified, and also the Children's Trust needed to be clarified as an item that was not part of the unrestricted general fund. So we've cleaned up a couple of those. Are those the only two? Did I get them both?
In the public school fund.
Public school trust fund. So those are cleanup housekeeping items. They don't in any way change how we've been handling things or how the legislature's been handling them since long before I came on board. But we just felt it would be good to have that in writing in the statutes.
And once again, I'm
I apologize, Annalee.
That's right.
The difference, if we go to this approach, the difference between the amount of, from the general fund and this, the new program receipts is how much?
Between 97 and 98, it's about $3 million increase. And the largest amount of that, I don't know if you have the fiscal note there in front of you attached. The first category assessments are about the same between the 2 years. The largest change is in the contract area. And as an aggregate, a good part of that is in fish and game with various special projects in commercial fisheries area that would be supported under this bill at a much increased level in 98. There's a small increase in the category we've called restricted fees. And then in the area that's restricted by either state or federal law, about a little over $500,000 difference there. So the largest is really in this area of contracts, much of which is in the economic development arena.
And in order to use that accounting method for the next fiscal year, this legislation has to pass this session?
Well, we do currently put it in the budget as designated program receipts. We've separated the category because we felt that it was good information for the legislature as well as the executive branch to have in making decisions, since these are increases which don't increase the fiscal gap. I think the advantage of passing this early on, and this was something that we just didn't have last year because of the timing, is that would enable those, as you go through the budget process, those things to be known up front, that these increases would not be part of the unrestricted general fund. So it clears that issue up at the beginning, as opposed to having it all come together at the same time that people are trying to pass the budget. So I think that would be a real advantage this year that we didn't have a year ago just because of the timing.
Further questions?
Thank you very much.
Who's going to answer the guide bill?
Your thoughts exactly, I learned.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Guy Bell. I'm Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Commerce. In the Division of Occupational Licensing, the division sets professional licensing fees on a biennial basis, which means that the fees cover 2 years. And the process the division does is it, in the accounting system, it aggregates cost as best it can on a profession-by-profession basis. It takes that aggregate cost and presents them to the licensing boards, works with the boards in projecting future costs, and then based on that input develops the biennial fees. It takes a lot of work. It's pretty labor-intensive to come up with biennial fees. And you're collecting, it's quite a cyclical operation then, because in 1 year, for instance, architects, engineers, and land surveyors will renew, and it'll bring in a large sum of revenue from that particular profession, and the next year will be a relatively low year from that profession. The way we smooth that out is by trying to balance out the number of professionals renewing in any fiscal year by license category. And the other approach that has been used with the legislature, which has been successful, I think, is to allow the division to carry forward excess receipts collected in 1 year into the next year, so that the receipts collected in 1 year, if they exceed the amount spent by the division, are allowed to be spent in the next fiscal year by the division or carried over into the next year to cover a potential shortage in revenue in the next year. It's just a quick synopsis of the approach we use with licensing.
Is there a substantial carryover each year? I mean, is this something that's increasing year to year, or is it done, I assume if it's done once, then it's done the next year?
That's correct. The division carried over something around $1 million from fiscal year 96 to 97, but 96 was a high year. We can get your projection for 97 carryover. But we expect there will be some. It's the estimating business is something we're relatively new to, and we expect there will be some carry forward from 97 into 98, and we could certainly get you that information.
Other questions? there anybody in the public wish to testify on Senate Bill 55?
Mr. Chairman, was it your intention to move the bill today?
I would leave it up to the committee. I don't object to that, or if you would like to hold it and think about it, we can do it next Tuesday when we meet, or we can move today.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I note that there are four committees of referral, which means that it's going to get a lot of scrutiny along the way. I tend to think the bill has some merit, and I just assume if there are no real problems in this committee, I just soon move it along today and let it see what happens in the road. Eventually it has to go to the Finance Committee, where I'm sure that Doug will be. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would move Senate Bill 55 out of committee with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection? I'll just note that I've expressed my concerns, and you may want to, I don't know if that we need to deal with that in the legislation so much as just that carries through in the legislative record, and that's our intent. Hearing no objections, the motion carries, and Senate Bill 55 is reported from committee. Any further business come before us? Hearing none, just note that our next meeting is anticipated to be next Tuesday, not scheduled to have a meeting on Thursday, and the agenda for that meeting will be posted by Thursday. We're adjourned.